Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find a perfect blend of food fun and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiedini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country. We are recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive, and I get to eat it. There's a lot to get into today. First things first, if you missed the last episode with Food Network's recent winner of Chopped, Chef Zachary Davila, it's a super episode. Go back and listen. Today's guest is Chef Brian Jacobs, owner of Tampa Bay's Liberty Smokehouse. All right, so the backstory of his outfit is humbling and needed in today's ever-growing feckless society. I can't wait to share about their 501(c) vets to success, and really we want to kind of help build the awareness to this cause. Chef Jacob is on deck. Speaking of vets, please be sure to check out Crab Island Seafood and order from Chef Tom and Chef Carl, not me. Seriously, they have a delicious line of dips and spreads. Check them out at crabislandseafooddip.com. Jeff, my brother, I'm so excited today, man. I'm fed. I'm happy.
You got meat sweats.
Fat and happy. Like, I'm just, you know, all smiles, man. Meat sweats, lobster sweats, all sorts of... All right. It's pre-shift time, baby. Pop the clutch and roll, doggy, roll.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring it today just because, you know, we haven't really done that much with seafood, and I wanted to do some different things. We did 3 different dishes today. We did hummus because I was still in that sourdough mode, and I wanted to do some sourdough pita. And I did some hummus that I pureed to where it was nice and creamy. And then we topped that off with some pecans, some tomatoes, olive oil, salt. And then we had some Aleppo pepper that I put in there as well. And the next dish, I wanted to pay tribute because I don't know if everybody knows this, but this past weekend was an extra day for spiny lobster season. It was just past one day, I think 14th it was. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Little lobster season down in the Keys.
Okay.
Spiny lobster tail. So I wanted to do something different with the ceviche. I marinated it in coconut rum and then I blanched it and then almost all the way done. Then I put it in so the citrus would cook the rest of it. The citrus was yuzu, orange, not tangerine. Sorry, still waiting for those. We got to talk to Quentin to make sure we can get some tangerines, some so like all year round.
Let's just try it out to the farm.
Yeah. Ugh, God, I need some tangerine bourbon, vanilla, marmalade. Is John is shaking his head.
Everybody's shaking their head. It's concise.
So here's really what I was trying to think of something different for a presentation. Was thinking summer, what could go well with it. So I went with watermelon, and I smoked the watermelon. And I wanted to give it an effect that the watermelon was like a log cooking the lobster. So I used activated charcoal to give it like this char look to it. And John's shots, I can't wait till they come out. They're just fantastic.
Okay. The hummus, stupidly amazing.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed the hummus. I think we need to put that in a bucket and sell it.
5 gallon bucket.
Yep. And that watermelon was right on. I never had, you know, smoked watermelon before. And I have to tell you, that was a great experience. And I feel like summertime, we should probably implement more of that. Yeah. Maybe another dish with some other iteration of it.
Yeah.
Cause that was stupid also. Yeah. Fire.
And so there's a dish I used to do. It was a miso glazed fish. We used tomato watermelon on top and kimchi. That's what we did. Smoking, that would add some more depth to it as well. And then the piece de resistance, the last one I did, I wanted to do a riff. Like we talked about tradition, and we were mentioning in one of our episodes about what the true national dish to Jamaica is. And it's not jerk. It's actually ackee and saltfish. Didn't want to use saltfish. I wanted to just showcase the fish that's indigenous to Florida. Grouper is the one I chose. I did a beautiful jerk marinade on that. And then I took, which from last week's chef, he brought in that beautiful milk crumble. I added to my recipe coconut shred to give it to the coconut flavor to it. So I was thinking a riff on coconut shrimp, which is very popular in Florida, obviously. But then I wanted to go the ackee way, which is just stewed tomatoes, caramelized onions, a little bit of thyme, scotch bonnet that you don't pop in there. It's one of those dishes. And then ackee, when it's not ripe, it can actually kill people. It's poisonous. When it's ripe and it opens up and buds, it's just this beautiful egg kind of consistency to it.
And thank you for feeding me this to me. Like I appreciate the experiment.
Well, here's the thing. I've never had fresh ackee. I've always had canned. And the family's been going back and forth. So somebody brought up some ackee.
Who was the first person that tasted this from you?
I don't
know. Was it me?
No, me. I tasted it. But it's just got this really complex depth to it. And then they normally have it with bami. Bami is cassava. It's pressed into this round cylinder. You have to marinate it because it's a dry product. Once you marinate it and then you sear it, it's got this like, the best thing that I can compare it to is like a potato pancake, but really thick. John was comparing it to bread. Yeah, he said it was almost like bread.
I was really pleased with that dish. I'll tell you what, that ackee I think would be terrific on a burger.
It's good on anything.
I mean, yeah, I feel like it has a real life on there. In other words, you might have to go, somebody going specifically for some Jamaican-esque cuisine would absolutely love that. But, you're talking about a small, you know, fraction. Niche. Right, niche. But if you put that on a burger, you know, grade A USA stuff, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I feel like that would sell like fire.
Really funny story. When we opened the gastropub in Lake Park, I actually had ackee saltfish on my menu for brunch. And every time somebody ordered it, I knew exactly who they were and where they were from because they were definitely Jamaican because they know as soon as they saw it and saw Bami on the menu, they went right to it. And we're just paying homage. Again, it's the traditional thing that I'm not from that culture. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to bastardize it, but I'm going to take attributes from it and I'm going to twist it to my own.
I'm going to pass you one of my dad. No.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to pass you one of my father's recipes and I want you to do it.
I will do it to the effect exactly what it weighs that in, and then I'll probably end up morphing it as I go, you know, back to look at that.
Yeah, I want to do a thing with it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I'd love to do that. I'd be honored.
Thank you.
Very, very truly honored.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Also an honor today. I am continuing my excitement with Chef Brian. You know, he's sitting here in studio. I that short rib.
It was a Brontosaurus burger.
Oh my god!
I was waiting for Dino to come running inside the house,
dude. I mean, oh boy, it's quitting time. I mean, yep. I tell you what, it slide me down the Brontosaurus and you know off the tail. I'm eating, dude. It was so good. Welcome to the program.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Man, the three of you today did. All right. So Brian, sous chef is here as well. Chef Justin, what you guys did today was spectacular. Thanks. Okay. Like this was, I feel like we should have had 30 people here, you know, with tickets. It should have been that kind of day.
Thank you.
All right. Now we'll get into what you actually cooked up. Just in a bit, but first, so you, Chef Brian, you've studied under Master Chef Peter Timmons, graduated from the Institute of Paul Bocuse in, Lyon, France, cooked for presidents, and now you own Liberty Smokehouse here in Tampa. You've experienced some very deep personal losses along your life's journey, and inevitably that gave you purpose. It gave you direction. Please share with us how the loss of your mother, father, brother, how that guided your path and how Vets to Success was born and kind of where you landed today, because you're doing some really, really amazing things.
I appreciate it. You know, it's purpose and pain. You know, I fell in love with cooking at a young age, and it was my grandfather that... He was a World War II chef and really just gave me he chose me because my mud cakes looked really good and my rocks looked well without having any culinary training. So it was me in the kitchen out of all the grandkids. And, I got a real young, lively earning. And it was one of those things that if we didn't grow it, we didn't cook it. My dad's side of the family is from Southern Georgia and farms, hogs, deer hunting. Catfish, you name it, we grew it, hunted, we had a pantry, always pickles and, preserving. And yeah, so I got a really great young culinary journey and didn't know at that time that, food was going to save my life. Myself, a combat veteran, did two tours in Iraq as a Navy corpsman, battlefield paramedic, served alongside the Marine Corps during my tours, the 03 invasion and 05 again. Younger brother, also Marine, served 03 with me. Both went in the same time, both went back a second time, and got out thinking the grass was greener on the other side, and was sod. It was a cover up of the dirt that you had to go through, the muck, and didn't realize that it was, I didn't have any idea who Brian was. I knew who HM3 FMF Jacobs was. And when you get out, you don't know who that person is or who you need to be. It took me 32 different jobs to, being homeless, to battling PTSD through my own medical observation, which is alcohol. And, it got this calling. My grandfather used to say something to me. It was like, you have to get your life together so no one else will for you. And I kind of heard that. I like shot in the dark or someone said it to me, and I went and signed up for culinary school. I was homeless. And I said, I'm going to do this. And lo and behold, it did. It had chosen me from a young age and didn't realize it. Did really well in culinary school. Worked for really great chef Hans Schadler in Virginia. Did some really great things up there. Was on my career path. Was in Gasparilla under Master Chef Peter Timmons. And ended up getting a call that kind of changed my life, which was my brother had taken his life. And, at that point in time, I was a private chef. I was cooking for great people. I was doing some amazing things at the time too. And, I just said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it with a purpose. I'm going to change lives through food. And that's what bore Vet to Success.
How long did it take you? So when you hear this news and, you're doing your thing, you're in your grind, you get hit with that. What do you do?
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
You know, I wasn't a praying man at the time, I'll say that. I had not had a great relationship with faith, but I look back knowing that God had a place for me and that this was my purpose in life. And it was one of those things, like they say, you can only connect the dots looking back, not looking forward. And I realized that had I not done the things I did or walked the shoes I had walked, I wouldn't be able to be the man I am to others and be able to, my testimony, be something that somebody can follow. And so I know I had to go through everything I had to go through. And I knew that that was something to somebody because I wasn't alone in that walk. I have heard so many stories of men and women being homeless from, you know, they didn't understand or they couldn't find a fit. They couldn't find service again. They couldn't find people to feel like they felt alone. And I was like, I know those feelings. But I had found this brotherhood in culinary, this sense of organized chaos that gave me function in the kitchen. And I figured if food saved me, it could save a few others.
Is that where your 501(c) came in?
Yeah, that's it started out as a very rudimentary program. Very, just wanted to give somebody some skill and give someone some hope.
Well, go ahead and give some detail on what you're doing.
So it's a reintegration program designed primarily to. Is 16 weeks of classical French culinary. You know, my idea is if you can learn, teach someone technique, you know, teach a man how to fish, you know, clean the fish, cook the fish, then they can survive. And this is the same idea. It's like you have to teach technique. You know, you can't just teach somebody to do one thing and expect them to be fruitful. You have to teach them classical technique. You have to, you know, grind that into them. For 16 weeks, we go through a reintegration of not just, you know, culinary training, but redefining who they are as people. I like to use this idea of your recipe of life. And then what we're able to do is take and find your bad ingredients in your own life. And within your bad ingredients, we're able to look at, you know, I asked them a really great question. It's like, if you could be any item in the world, what would you be? And this, you know, gentleman, he goes, I'd be German chocolate cake. All right, cool. Well, why? Well, I love the way it looks. And I said, well, if you had bad eggs, would you be able to be German chocolate cake? And he was like, no. I said, so what's the process of getting eggs? Well, a lot of us go, you go to the store, you crack them, you use them. Well, where do eggs come from? Oh, they come from a chicken. Where's that chicken? Oh, it's over here. Well, where's that chicken come from? Where's that? Oh, you got to feed the chicken. It's got to hatch. So they start to understand that their own personal problems are a lot deeper because their recipe for themselves can't be complete unless they really go to the root of the situation.
I think that's a beautiful approach to something that is definitely part of where we are today, you know, especially after the last, you know, 20 plus years with, you know, all of the, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan and, you know, all our, you know, guys and gals who've been doing their tours and now it's like an aftermath. And how many people come through the program?
Well, we've had 44 go through the program pre-COVID. I stopped the program at the time because what I realized is that we were sending these men and women out to, you know, units that didn't have the same conventional ideals that we have within Liberty, which is someone who actually cares about the person left, right, front, back. And, you know, it's kind of re-educating kitchen culture and giving, you know, because we don't put people into jobs, put them into mentorships. We want kitchens to bring on people. They want to create young, energetic, new culinary talent. And we feel the best way to do that is to re-implement it through Liberty, where we have people who actually care about your success. And we want to be a stepping table for great chefs. We want people to come through our perspective and be able to go on with the foundation teachings and be able to rear new kitchen culture. Instead of this idea of every man for himself, it should be a cohesive culture that's building talent, strength in the kitchen again to be create leaders. And I've seen countless times in other kitchens where you know, yeah, some, you have some chefs have been in the business 30 years, 40 years, 10 years. We've gotten to a place where, you know, even when I was an apprentice, that we used to cancel people quickly. And we've, now we're in this hospitality begging for talent and help, but we, now everybody wants to go be a influencer or an IT person, and we're hurting for quality people and the leadership in the kitchen. And now we're in a piece where you just finding the leaders is a hard place. And it's like, okay, we've got to re-engineer the way we treat people.
Agreed. And I think, and Jeff, I want you to chime in on this. I feel like the reason you're not getting quality leadership, folks with leadership skills, is because they're not eating nails like they used to in order to learn the experiences to get some of that leadership skill. I know you'll have a different take on that, Jeff, but I feel like somewhere in the middle of what I said and what you're going to say is probably a truth. Jump in.
Yeah, I think, and Chef definitely just pointed out, and I love that he kind of made the connection between we're hurting for staff now, and then yet we have vets that are serving and sacrificing and the ultimate sacrifice, but we're not putting the two together. And that's a shame on us as a community, because at the end of the day, we're all about community. When we're serving food, and we're not doing brain surgery. No one's passing away, but thank God, hopefully, at the end of the day. Right. And that's a norm saying in our business. And, you know, you look at one of the biggest things, and I just wrote about this. This is ironic, that I think what we've missed now is family meal. Mm-hmm. I think that when major companies, and, you know, we're talking the big boys on the block that take away that right of having, because it's the ROI, I think they would actually enhance the ROI if they had community where they actually sat down and the chefs and the leaders of that particular establishment learned everything about their staff.
How many, when you're younger, probably more apropos, but how many jobs in your lives did you stay because of the people you worked with, because you built some rapport and you had that deep connection? And in spite of the fact that, you know, there was a tyrannical ownership or whatever, you stayed, right?
I'll give you a, for instance, and sorry for interrupting, but I was, my position at the Marriott Singer Island was terminated, right? They got rid of it. They had too many chiefs, not enough Indians. And I remember when they told me I was losing the position, and I cried. And it wasn't because I was crying because I lost my job. It was, I was crying because I was losing the team I had built. And I had a fantastic team. I had 7 outlets. I had 1 sous chef. We had, you know, 400 plus rooms right on Singer Island. And the stuff we did, the food cost we hit, the food we popped out. Every day I would walk out and I'd set a $100 bill on the counter. I'm like, you guys can get $100 extra today if you just work faster, more efficiently than I can. You got $100. And you can tell, I can tell you right now, nobody took it because I was not partying with $100.
Yeah. Not you, buddy.
No, no. And I would have given it to people. One of those things that's a great way to push your people, to drive them to get to that next level. It's not throwing the pots. It's not throwing the pans. I remember going through culinary school. I remember my externship. I remember Smale coming in. His name was Smale, a French chef. He would come into the kitchen and it was 10 o'clock, 10:15, drunk off his butt, and just, who told you to close down and F this? And boom, there goes a pan. Boom, there goes a knife. You're like, holy, you know, and that's how it was. And I sat there and said, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
You know, we as chefs now, the generation that are looking around and scratching our head going, I can't find people. Then you got to look at yourself.
Yep.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
Of course, you always have to look. So when you're in a mentorship or leadership role, have the experience and, you know, you're at a place where you need to share that experience, all that's well and good. But if you, the people that you have need to crawl over coals in some way, shape or form in order to really learn. If not, you're not going to, how does somebody, nobody is going to be able to just stand up one day and be a leader. Very, very rare is that. Yep. Right. So, and I'm not saying getting pans thrown at you, I was never in a back of the house guy, but I've had pans and knives thrown at me. We've done all those things. I've had the fist fights with the guys on the line, in the cooler, in the back, you know, whatever, done all that stuff. But I also earned respect because it was always a handshake at the end and let's go get a drink or whatever. And it was just like an earned relationships. But the reality is I wouldn't be who I was unless I did all of those dumb things and had you guys do the stupid, horrible things that you do to us in the front. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't understand. And if that didn't happen, I wouldn't be able to take that experience and turn it into a learning moment or a teachable moment for somebody else.
Well, I mean, you can. There's a way to deliver it.
Right.
And it's all in delivery. And being in the middle, and that's one of the things that I look at the restaurant industry as a whole is that light. And everyone else that's coming to it is the moth. And the moths go right to the light. And for some reason, whether it be because of the leadership we have, the hierarchy in the kitchen, whatever it is, I find more military personnel come into the kitchens that have their issues, that have their crutches that they go through. That's one of the reasons why we have such a problem with the restaurant industry and the mental health aspect of it. That's why we have such an addiction problem. We're not number one in suicide. We're number nine, which is not good still, but we're the highest in drug use, alcohol, everything that you talk about in addiction. We're the highest.
Mental health issues.
Everything you got to talk about. And it's because we're the misfits. We're the pirates. We're the ones that bring all these people together because we have that camaraderie.
Hold on. Chef Brian, I want to hear you. So traditionally, it's misfits.
Yeah.
I don't think it's so much misfits today. And I could be wrong, but I think it's less today. And here's why. Here's my take on it. Back in the day, I just had this conversation yesterday with another chef. Back in the day, really the people who went into the kitchen, it's because they had a record or they were hiding something. It was like a last resort. And I ended up in the kitchen flipping burgers. And all of a sudden I like this and I want to start my career in culinary. Today, you know, after 25 years of Food Network and 25 years of celebrity chefs and, you know, the lead ups to the celebrity chefs. Now it's like, oh, I want to go to culinary school because this is glamorous. This could be glamorous. It could, you know, so there's a different element. So now you're not necessarily getting misfits. Now you're getting people who went to school, you know, educated, right? So chef, I'd like to hear your take on that. And then you can also sprinkle in drizzle, if you will. The fact that it's the military component, I think is a big deal because, so I didn't go to I was not in the service. But I did, when I was younger, go through a military program, let's say. And I dealt with, you know,
Riverside Military School?
6'5", you know, DIs who, you know, in that initiation night, they, you know, all the horrible things that happened. I experienced that. I did a 90-day thing and it was terrible. The difference is you guys, they beat the hell out of you, but then they build you back together.
Right.
I didn't have that experience. But so anyway.
So it's, you know, I'll say the misfit children still exist.
Thank you.
They're very much present. But I tell you what has changed. It's the standard that the executive chef, the leadership is setting. And in fact, I take that approach. I tear you down and I build you back up, but I build you back in a way that gives you more poise and more respect for yourself and creates a self standard. Because as I explained to all my guys that are coming on board is I'm not always going to be the person telling you what to do and how to get it done. You're going to have to take initiative for yourself and you're going to have to set the standard. And if you do it wrong, we fix it right. that's just the way it is. I think everybody who walks through that door wants better, but they have to come in contact with a leader that's going to make them better. That's the where the rubber hits the road is, and you know it's walk and talk. Are you doing what you say and saying what you do, and are you setting that leadership level to those who are walking through that door? Because someone's going to be able to walk into someone who says they're an executive chef and somebody who acts like an executive chef is two different things.
Amen. Sorry, amen. And it goes to show again, leadership is when somebody does something wrong, how do you handle it?
Yep.
Is it you're going to throw the pan or you're going to yell at them? So my take was when somebody did something right, I used to scare my line. They would throw up the dish in the window and I'm like, who made that? And I was really stern, like, who made that? Like, I did, you know, like that really apprehensive raising the hand. And I'm like, can you do me a favor? Like, what? Can you show the rest of the line how to make that? It's perfect. I want you to do that each and every time you put that dish up. And I wasn't doing it, like, especially in an open kitchen like Brio. I was saying that so that the guest heard it. Like, the guest would stop because I was making such a commotion. On the flip side, when somebody did something wrong, I walked behind the line, walked over, and handed it back to the chef or the cook. And I said, would you serve this to your mother?
All right. Standard.
That's your standard. Would you serve that to your mother? No. Then why are you serving it to my guest?
Yeah.
That's how I handled it. If you do it that way, you're not belittling that person. You're not making that right. You're giving the respect to the person because, hey, we're only human. At the end of the night, we're not doing brain surgery. No one's died. Again, I wouldn't say that because that's something that's always been drilled in my head.
Yeah.
Why are we treating people like garbage just because they put up food that is not up to par? Maybe they had a fight with their wife. Maybe they have that drinking problem. Maybe who knows what's going on through their head.
Yeah.
But why take them and just beat the crap down out of them so that what they do, leave?
It's always the fight with the wife.
Yeah. Always look. It, no, it, I mean, look. A home problem becomes a
work problem.
Work problem, yep. In a heartbeat, and you can taste it in the food. You can see it in their actions. You know, and that's the thing. It's like even you know, speaking of that, you know, I'd kind of do the same thing. You know, like when you know Chef Justin was starting learning on a smoker. You know, no background, and you know, he had a really great night on doing ribs and everything. I mean, came up perfectly, and I gathered everybody around. I was like. And I even like did this whole like smacked him in the face. I was like, that's how you cook ribs. Don't you ever do it wrong again. You know, like don't you ever make this. This is. And everybody was like blown away. And I was like, but at the same time, you know, when someone makes a mistake, I look at them. Is that how it's supposed to be done? And they know. And matter of fact, I'll be honest with you. We've had a couple guys go through some things where, you know, they've never had expectations for themselves. And when they've made mistakes, they apologize without me even knowing they made the mistake. That's when you know you have a standard in place.
That's character.
Yeah. Well, it's not only that. It's here's the thought process, right? A lot of times, and we say it all the time, is the restaurant industry used to be transient.
Yeah. Right?
That's what we were known for. Yeah. I'm going to college to do this. I wanted to get money while I'm going to college. You made a comment. Well, I just fell into this because I have a record and I can't get a job. Well, this schmuck sitting across from you wanted to become a restaurant guy since the age of 8. You know, I worked in the industry since I was 12.
Yep.
I wanted to get involved in this because I chose a job that was a hobby and that I love doing what I do.
Yep.
I hate the politics in the restaurant community. And I think that when you have somebody that has the ability to instill what Chef said, that they realize I messed up and own it. That's ownership.
Yep.
You can't, that's a hard thing to teach.
Yep.
And when you can gravitate and teach that person and convey that message, here's the thing. One of the reasons why chefs never like to leave their restaurants, even if they don't own in the restaurant or not, is because they feel that if they leave, the ship will go down. It's because you didn't train your staff the way you needed to train the staff.
And, amen. And see, that's funny. I was like, I feel completely comfortable with my guys.
Because you're setting that standard and you're teaching them your vision and you have the buy-in from the staff to have that.
Yep.
Speaking of vision, I can't wait for that short rib photo, for those pictures that come out. Because, man, I tell you, just wow.
Everything today.
Everything. I mean, listen, all of it, right? But, you know, I fancy, you know.
Short meat. Ribs.
Yeah. Yes. And so for me, I'm just, and I know, John, I can't wait. I just can't.
I just want to say this. If anybody wants pictures taken of their food and wants a really great job done, please just contact Ibis Images, for crying out loud.
It was amazing. Right. Like, it made me feel good about my food. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, truth is, like, if you haven't had your dish photographed by John Hernandez,
the celebrity,
then you're nobody.
The celebrity.
Okay.
Then no
That's
one knows
the way it works. Chef Brian, tell me what it's like, private chefing for the Anheuser-Busch family or former President Bush. Like, what? Come on.
That was cool. You know,
I mean, you got Bush and Bush, Anheuser-Busch, and then you got President Bush. Like, okay. But what talk about
it. It was really cool. Especially the former president was, really interesting. I'd actually tell you two cool stories about both. I was interviewing, as a private chef for many different families, and all extreme top 1% families. And when I came to meet the Bush family, the whole family stood up and said, "Thank you for your service," before we even talked job, anything like that. And that was a sell for me instantly. It was like, these people just, they respect me. And they want me to be a part of their family. And that was such a big deal to me. And they were all American, believed in the military, believed in just, I don't know, everything that I had stood for, wanted to be something. They loved what they did, even though there was just beer. I mean, I got to drink all 13 breweries, all different 17 varieties of beer, with Augustus Bush himself, go through flavor profiles, you know, telling him what was off. It was an amazing, cool experience. Former President Bush, literally walked through a house full of senators and congressmen and ups, walked up to me and said, he goes, "I know who you are. I know what you did. I want you to know you're a hero." And it was the first time that anybody had ever called me a hero. Because it was my job to save lives. That's what I did.
All right. So you sent me a bio. Okay. I'd asked you to, and I don't recall seeing what you're referencing.
No,
and you might be uncomfortable. May I ask you to share what that was? And if you'd say no, I'm okay with that.
I was in the Battle of Nasiriyah. It's in the history books. It's one of the first major conflicts the Marine Corps had been in since Vietnam. And I did my job, even though it wasn't my unit I did it for. And saved Marines. And it was just something, it was what I did. It was what I was trained to do. And it was something, I know that, in on papers, some foreign place now has got accommodation for, and he got his hands on it. So it was really great.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
So most of the time you listen to chefs talk, and I think we were here one time and we were asking somebody to give a bio, and I walked up and I said, "Now's not the time to be humble."
Right.
A really great chef is humble. They don't need the accolades, and that's what, I see from him. And I'll be honest with you. He gave me the bio last night, and then I went on your website to go find out who you were. And the first picture I saw, you had some pastry background.
Yeah.
I knew right away. You see that? I didn't even tell you about that one. Yeah. I'm looking at Justin. And the difference is I was talking to Justin about this, when you have somebody that goes from pastry to savory, they're a weapon. There is just, they have flavor profiles. They have an eye for things, that the tenacity, they're just an impeccable machine. And when I saw that dish, I'm like, this guy's got some culinary chops. And then I read the bio, Master Chef, and where you were from. How did you go from the aspect of being with the master chef and working for the Anheuser-Busch and all this to going, huh, barbecue. I kind of did the same thing, so I want to know your story.
We actually were all asking each other that question about like how did that happen.
You know, it's funny. I got, and man, this is going to be an awful thing to say. I got bored. I got bored cooking molecular. I got bored cooking sous vide. I think those are part of your arsenal, right? Mm-hmm. The thing I did not and have not ever and probably will never ever conquer is live fire. And smoke. And it's just because every cook is so different. Every piece of wood is so different. Every piece of meat is so different. And I'm like, man, this is going to be the greatest challenge for the rest of my life. And I said, this is like, I will never master this. And I think that's what the greatest like thing in my heart is about it. And there's just something so beautiful about that, knowing that you're never going to master it, that you're always going to chase this perfection behind it. Because I consider myself a cook. I don't consider myself a chef. I love chasing knowledge. And I was like, every fire is so mean and vulgar and resentful. But then it's such a good lesson. And that's kind of what I look at.
That is that's everybody's ex. That's everybody's ex-wife. Great lessons. And you never master it. And that's just the way it works, man. My goodness, man. These are some real truth bombs going on here today.
And it's primal.
Yeah.
Right?
It's yeah. And it can be unforgiving, but it can be so forgiving.
What happened? What was the catalyst for you to say, I'm going barbecue?
You know, I look at our American food's just been so bastardized. and it's been so washed to the side of the greatness that it used to be. And yeah, you know, refrigeration, all this advent electricity and all this, but we as a culture, you know, we're still really defining our food culture, but barbecue is, fire and smoke is our food culture. We've just gotten really away from it. And being overseas and living in these different places, you know, they really embrace the rudimentary aspects of where their food came from. And I was like, man, we have just walked away from it.
What would your classmates at Beaucuse say about this?
They would actually agree because my nickname was the cowboy. They were like, "Say cowboy, what is the cowboy going to cook?"
It's pretty good.
That was awesome.
He actually sounds like John Paul.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah. And it was funny, because I
touched my ass.
Yeah, you just touched my ass. Nothing. Yeah. And but they would there was because I always said, "Oh, you're a grand cuisine," and like everything I did was just so grand and bright and big and fun. And then when I started to play with fire and smoke over there, and it was not until I got into Finland and Norway where I was just like, yes. Like this took me back home to being 8, 9 years old, with my dad in the backyard building a pit, cooking on an old school Weber kettle, and it's just like my heart was like, that's where I belong. Well,
so Finland and what? How come
Norway? Part of the culinary journey in Beaucuse, we go there for months to work with great chefs and study in the food science labs, and we would go through innovation schools. Everything.
How long is that program?
2 years.
How old were you when you did this?
2015.
So you kind of started this a little bit late.
Yeah, I started, I didn't go to culinary school until 2009, but had been cooking since I was 8 years old. And first restaurant job was at 14. Man, you know, dishwasher, guy calls out, saute, and you walk in and you're able to saute. And the chef's like, how do you know how to do that? And I'm like, my granddad's a chef. And he was like, come back tomorrow.
it's funny how a lot of chefs, a lot of kitchen folk, 14, 15, dishwasher, and then they called me in for one of, you know, to fill in or whatever on the line. And then like me, I started at 15 also, but I was like a busser, right? And I started that way, and then you know, I kind of progressed through the front of the house.
Yeah.
Even though they tried to pull me in.
I didn't do good in front of the house. I was not.
I have Tourette's.
Yeah. My language was, my dad was a sailor, and I wasn't foul mouthed, but I wasn't
refined.
Yeah. I wasn't refined enough for the front of the house. I was very rough.
Yeah. Well, that's it's a learned skill though.
Oh, it is.
You know what I mean?
I've learned it now. Now I can interact with anybody and it's great but that's what, you know, 4 years of being a thespian, you know, not a lesbian, but thespian.
Well, whatever you like.
Have a kid and watch how it changes your life. Because my kid goes, can I say it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. You're going to probably use the better connotation I'm going to.
Yeah, they would hand me a knife, bunch of carrots or whatever. And I'm like, I felt like it was punishment. I felt like I was literally punished. Like, man, what are you? I don't want to do this. I'm like, I'm staring at a wall. I'm just sitting, like, what is this? It's dirty. Yeah. Like, I want to go to the front of the house. I want to see the pretty people. Girls walking through. I want to be out there. I don't, you know.
Well, that's funny. That's what changed when I became a Sioux. Is like now you get to interact with the guest, and you know you're beating like the people who like some of the families I met, like Adams Golf, you know, like their daughters, like like ridiculous. Like you're meeting all these people with just bukus of money, you know, and they're like, the daughters are like 12s, you know, and they're like, you're like 20 some, you know, 30, young 30 or young 20. And you're like, yes, this is definitely my job. Like, this is a great job.
I will tell you this, you chefs, when it comes down to it, when it comes down to the accolades, you guys are the fighter pilots. No offense, of course, to the Marine Corps and whatnot, but you guys are like the fighter pilots of the industry. You know, everybody looks at you guys like the action, you know, who's in charge, you know, hey, we're calling in the, you know what I mean? It's just what it is. And I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's funny is like, I run our kitchen like the military, but everybody has an assigned role and they know their role. They know what they can do best. And then they also can call in support when it's their time to call in support. You know, that's the thing about being part of the Marine Corps when I was. Every Marine's a rifleman first, but they also had a second job. They knew, like, you know, just because you could be a forward observer or you could be calling in, you know, airstrikes or, you know, these things, like, you were still a rifleman too, you know. So you had other jobs, responsibilities, but your main goal was to fight the fight in all aspects. And so that's what I think we're rearing up in our kitchen is, like, people, they know their jobs, but then they know what else they can bring to the table too.
Did your military experience, did that help you in any way with some of those, you know, personal losses?
Yeah, it's probably a bad thing though, because being a Navy corpsman, death is it's the second thing you see in life. And unfortunately, I was emotionally numb, probably still am quite a bit. I mean, I lost my brother, lost my mom a year later. And just lost my father 2 years ago. And you grieve different. You look at loss of life different. Have I cried? Yeah, I've cried. I mean, I still have bad days. I mean, PTSD is one of those things I live with. And sometimes, you know, even the realizing the loss of a loved one when you don't overly think about it and then it hits you that they are gone, you grieve a little bit differently.
You know, I can appreciate that. I lost my mom, like, let's say 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, and then my dad last year.
Yeah.
And then it was odd losing one of them.
Yeah.
But you still had the other.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, okay, you know, this is not great. This is terrible. But you got the other one. But then when you lose both, it's a different feel.
Yeah.
And there is a numbness I experienced with that.
Yeah.
Where you know, I'm not surprised by anything in terms of deaths and things of that nature. Not surprised by anything. And it kind of is what it is. And I don't know if I'm right or wrong for feeling that way, but that's a real thing.
Yeah. Chef Justin, unfortunately, has lost his father too. And so it's, you know, not to, you want to be in part of the lost your family members club, you know, but it's a reality of, so I hate to say it's a life check. You know, it's, my dad truly believed in what I'm doing. My mom believed in what I was doing. My brother loved to eat whatever I cooked. And so it's this, you know, he also lost his uncle, which was a chef and someone who inspired him deeply. And so it's, you know, it's almost like these little things happen to reassure you that you're on the right path. And it's part of that process of you becoming the person you're supposed to become to get closer to your purpose and your calling.
Do you have resources set up for your employees? for it, mental health? Obviously, that's a big kicker for you as well.
It's actually really cool. Chef Justin and his wife, actually, and both my wife both are medical professionals. And I have resources through the VA and mental health, but his wife actually works with a lot of local health. And so these are things that we do what we have to do to make sure that our employees have what they need to have from basic needs, food, shelter, and clothing.
Gotcha.
Because why? If you're looking for one of those three needs, you're not educatable and you're not trainable and you're not going to be willing to be part of a team.
Well, you also have the excuse the pun, but you have the baggage that comes along with somebody that has all those issues. So obviously exactly. They have some mental issues. So there's some culinary resources out there. So everyone knows Chow is another resource, culinary hospitality outreach wellness program. There's Burnt Chef, mm-hmm. Ben's Friends, Fair Kitchens. You can contact Carl or myself. I can definitely get you some resources, anybody that needs it.
Yeah, we'd love to have some extras.
Well, yeah. Yes. Yes to everything Jeff just said. And while we're talking about it, and I'll put it in the in our descriptions and whatnot. How do people find out about what your 513C is?
So it's pretty much a direct contact. It's going to be vets2success.org. We're going through a revamp on website right now. 501c3 will be back up in kind of organizing and running once Liberty gets a little further along. Because as it is, you know, what I've realized in. We want to be that first step, and there's some work to do with some other programs, the ACF being one of them, trying to get in focus with them to get other chefs involved. Because, you know, it's what my greatest thing learning as a young chef was I didn't stick with one chef. I had a round robin of chefs that educated me in different places. That's why I do have the pastry background. You know, that made me more lethal. And we have to rear other chefs that same way, because not everybody is going to want to be a cook in a savory kitchen. They may have a better fit in another place. And, you know, these other businesses that are hiring for a fit, I think kitchens shouldn't kind of take on that same perspective, because you may have great catering personnel. You may have great pastry personnel. You may have great line cooks, but you don't know that until you get them into those fits. Because, and that's what I've learned from, we want to stick somebody into place and that's where they get stuck and then they get burnt out and then they hate that job and the food sucks and then your ratings go down and it's like, why? Well, because they're not a fit.
Or they're such a fit, you just don't want to move them. Exactly. And that's the biggest.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest downfall of any leader, any boss, any chef is when you have that. Oh man, he's a rock star. She's a rock star. They could just get up there. When she's on pantry or she's on saute, I don't have to worry about nothing. Problem is, they have dreams and aspirations. They don't want to be stuck
there. Exactly. And that's one thing we want to do with Liberty. I want you to take Chef Justin's job. I want you to take this person's job.
You hear that, Justin?
Not my job.
You hear it?
Hypothetically. Not his job.
Yeah.
But I mean, can't have Brian's job.
Because I want Chef Justin to step up. I want him to, I want to step into an even better role. You know, I want to work on my business, not in my business, and be able to develop Liberty so my guys and girls can have more. You know, and I can't do that being present 24/7 within the business, doing the things that they can be great at. And so that's what I want them to do, is be great at those positions. And even we have a guy who's like, if I could learn the smoker, I know I could, you know, give Chef Justin a break. And I'm like, yeah, go do it.
Learn the smoker.
Yeah. But that's the aspirations that we have. They want that next step. Because they feel like, and I'm like, well, and this is what I just reminded me, could you teach somebody to do what you're doing and trust them to do it? But like, oh, I didn't think about it like that. I said, well, what's going to happen to the standard? Well, I'm going to have to teach them that. There you go.
George W. Bush.
George W., he's cool.
Right. So when he would speak with him, mm-hmm. Is it like he speaks like?
Yeah, like on, same? Yeah. He's the same. He's actually quite comedic. He was really just down to earth. Spoke just as
he's a funny guy, right?
Yeah, he's funny. There was no like, I don't know. I guess a lot of people think, oh, it's a president. How do you act? I'm just like, he's just a dude. You know, like
put a pants, right leg, left leg, or left leg, right leg. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, Virginia Bush. She was like, you know, the president's coming tonight, and I'm like, yes, ma'am. And I was like, you know, like, and she was like, how do you feel? I was like, well, the same guy sent me to combat, you know, like,
like touche.
And you know, he loves the mansion on Turtle Creek is actually his favorite restaurant. And so I ended up making his favorite dish, which was the chicken tortilla soup. You know, they were like, he's like, well, he's going to come back to dinner for the soup. And I'm like, oh, is that so? And I was like, I guess I can keep my job, you know, like, it's funny. They're like, yeah, chef, you know, you're good. You know? So, and it was a really cool experience. I mean, because, like baseball legends would come to dinner, you know, people that were just like people you never thought you would meet, you know, but they're all normal, humble, just down to earth people. Like I met the guy who created the artificial heart.
What?
Yeah. But like,
yeah, chefs, we get to meet a lot of interesting people.
Yeah. I met Tia. What's her name from Bad Boys? Tia from the first Bad Boys.
Tia, not Carrera.
No, Tia Malone.
Marie? Tia Maria?
No, that's a drink.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's what I need right now. I don't
know. No, you need bourbon.
Yeah.
I forgot her name, but she was.
I know who you're talking about. Tia, she had the short hair.
Yeah. The blonde. Yeah.
Oh, what is her name? I forget.
And, yeah.
We used to have a producer that would look that stuff up, but, you know, we don't have that anymore.
He's silent.
kidding.
He's doing his due diligence.
I'm kidding over there.
No, he's actually taking pictures.
He legit is mad that I said
that. When you see that face, that's mad.
Yeah.
So I want to bring it back to real quick. It's funny and ironic. And do you realize where barbecue comes from?
There's multiple variations of history to it. It's a lot of indigenous culture, actually.
Where from?
Africa.
And?
You're going to get some out of the islands, mostly out of the Middle East. There's going to be a lot of North African into it, a lot of slave culture.
So barbacoa.
Yeah. And
you know where that word comes from?
Yeah, it's Latin.
From where's your wife from?
Yeah, Puerto Rico.
And those indigenous people of Indian, So that's where barbacoa comes from. Yeah. Barbecue is where it comes from. So that's kind of ironic that your wife is Puerto Rican and you got into barbecue.
Yeah. Well, so. It's funny. What's really funny about that is like how much of the Latin community loves barbecue. We have a huge Latin following and I did not think it was such a thing where, you know, cause you know, you go to Puerto Rico and you're not eating any barbecue. But it's such a big thing that we have, and they love the twists and plays like stuffed totones and, our version of arroz con gandules and, you know, like playing with some acopurias and some other pieces, but adding our smoked and charred meats and stuff like that is like, they're all about it.
So I got a newsflash. We've interviewed.
I have a newsflash.
The beard guy.
Tia Leone.
Yeah, Tia Leone.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
So. Fred, right? From the bearded, So he's in the Arab Emirates and he's saying to us, you would not understand the fever over American barbecue.
It's so funny.
Around the world.
Yeah. It's a big deal. Like it's mind blowing that I did not realize this. Like we had people flying from Portugal the other day just to eat with us because they're like, we heard we're in our labor in Tampa and we heard you were the best and we wanted to come eat this beef rib. And that's what they did. Took their hour and a half layover, came, grabbed beef rib, got back on the plane, and flew to Washington.
Like, I need friends like that. I got you two.
Yeah. I mean, they were a husband and wife. I mean, they were just, they were on a barbecue homage. And they said, we had to have it. So I was like, and then.
Yeah. That's what I want in my life. I just realized it. That's my goal in life.
But here's the thing.
Yeah, I'm just.
Nobody wants to come to him to eat. Trust me.
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. Listen, as it turns out, this is the best business move I ever made. You know, because I get really, Jeff spoils the hell out of me, and I love it. But then the chefs that come through, you know, I've been in the business now 25 plus years. I know.
This is his family meal.
Yeah. This is
a great family meal.
Yeah.
But the camaraderie is real. Listen, when there's a guest, a prospective guest, and we're talking and like, well, what time should we come in? And like, listen, if you really want to get the full experience of what we do, you need to be here a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Because the truth is we're doing the cooking. Jeff is usually. So doing the cooking, right? We're doing the photography and it's not like fake food. It's like the real food. And then we eat the food and it's the camaraderie of it. You know,
it's breaking bread together and that's what it's all about. And it's so funny you talk about that because that's the fundamental aspect of like behind Liberty is like we, at one time you used to impact your community and your neighbors through your gifts. And like breaking bread together was such an important thing for a community. And it made all the difference. And, you know, you talk about like just impacting lives from that little, just that little piece of giving. It's crazy. Like
Thursdays, you know, production days for me is it's a getaway. It's not just filling my belly as what Jeff was, it would be believing. It's a getaway for me to be with cool people doing cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And it really is building a, you know, I hate the term, you know, the family thing is a very overused term, but it's a family that is being extended every single week for the guests that come here. And I think that's what makes what we do special, mm-hmm. right? Because it's not just like, hey, we're talking heads, there's microphones and hey, thank you for coming on the, no, it's none of that. It's like, hey, we're breaking bread.
Yeah. We're real people together. Talking real things and having gone through real life issues. And,
yeah.
Well, I think that's the problem with society, especially with mental health. It's men should not discuss their emotions. Men should sequester it. They should push them down. And that's, we were grown up that way. Suck it up, buttercup.
Well, I'm okay with that. I think nobody's ever going to change my mind. If men should be around other men to talk about those things. I am a firm believer that there's certain things you don't bring up to your spouse.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm saying in general, the rule of thumb, the society is, when you saw that one video of that man on the side of the road calling 911 because he was going to commit suicide and the officer came.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Right. No. And he, that to me is what, that should happen.
Yeah.
Because that person held those emotions so deep inside themselves that they needed that help. We should never get to that point.
Yeah.
And that when you sit down and you're with your staff and you're breaking bread and you're having that meal, that's the perfect opportunity. I mean, Anthony Bourdain, may he rest his soul, was the pillar of that, you know, image of breaking bread with leaders from around the world, people, common folks, about what their cuisine was. And he was, you know, asked to come to their house, but yet the whole time we sat there and didn't really kind of digest that he had his demons. Yet he was the epitome of what we need to do today as far as talking about things.
You can't look at anybody and understand or know or guess what is in their head or their spirit.
Yeah.
Never.
I mean, how many times do you go out to somewhere and you just look at somebody and they have that bubbly personality and you walk up to them and like, I love your energy.
Yeah.
How many people do that?
Yeah. We forgot. I do it too. I was like, you have a girl, you're going to go far because of the way you carry yourself and the way you treat people.
But there's so many times where you're like, oh, you're a piece of, you're just too high strung.
Yeah.
Because here's the problem. They have the person saying that to them, deflecting, is having their own issues.
Yeah.
For whatever reason it might be. But as a society, why can't we just be what we need to be as humans?
Yeah.
And well, I think that's what we need to talk about.
Well, that's that community thing.
I'm different.
Oh, I know you are.
Well, I'm a mirror of who I'm with. I'm a mirror, you know. I have my own thoughts, my ways, you know, my ideas, and I'm pretty rock solid in all of these things. Mm-hmm. But in terms of social situations, I am a mirror of who I'm with. So if I choose to hang out with somebody who's, you know, not awesome, then I'm not awesome too. Or, you know, so it really matters on who you associate with and who you bring into your circle, who you hire, you know, and over the years, I'm, you know, 50 years old now, right? So I've learned that my gut instincts on people are pretty right on.
Right.
And because of this whole thing, it's, I, you know, like, see this guy, what I'm getting at? He's a lunatic, but we love him.
Yeah.
But he's insane.
But he's the right kind of lunatic,
though. He's the right lunatic. When we were introduced by a very dear friend, Coco, who passed last year. And, you know, rest her soul. She's like, oh, man, you got to meet this guy, Carl. And she said the same thing to him. And we met. I was like, immediately, I was like, I love this guy.
It was like a date.
Awesome. It was almost like, yeah, it was most heterosexual date ever. It was really awesome. And, but meanwhile, fits right in, even with different ideas, different thoughts, different things. We click we click.
Yeah.
So now when we bring people into our sphere, into this walk and talk media sphere, man, I tell you what, You see how when we met a couple of months ago?
Yeah.
We hung out for what, hour and a half?
Almost 2 hours, actually. Actually, we talked about that. We were like, that was not your normal, like, passerby. Let me see what you're up to. Like, I mean, it was really interesting.
If we got together and did that, and I felt that you guys were stiffs or you guys were disingenuous or something like that, we wouldn't, this would never take place.
No, no, I understand. I mean, same thing with Chef Justin. When he came on board, it was interesting. He came and ate my food and I was like, had my meat in his mouth, you know, and was, and next thing you know, he's got a job. You know, he's like, I want to work. I want to do this.
To have your, so you chose, I'm going to stop. You know,
I just want to go on record. This one didn't say a word.
I know. And it's funny because you talked about Fred. Remember you're talking about Fred? Yes, he said that on air.
He literally said that. He goes, Carl, you had my meat in your mouth.
Yeah. So last November, I was I was really, really blessed with, you know, being a master judge at the World Food Championship.
I trained him very well.
Yeah. Very well.
And, Fred was one of the contestants in the live fire. And he was the only one who took this approach where he was going to cut everything up and make a show out of it. Here, taste it. And when we had him on the program, I brought that up, and he's like, yeah, you know, you had my meat in your mouth. And I was like, I walked right into that one.
You know what's funny? You just said that, and then not the funny part about him saying that. What's funny is when you have somebody that loves and has the passion for cooking, like Fred does and like Chef does, they don't mind giving you their food. Here, come taste this.
Yeah.
They want you to experience it because they want to see that light, that twinkle, that oh my God moment of being.
If you stuff your fingers near my face anymore with samples of what you cook, I don't know how to do it myself. Holy my goodness.
But that's what we do. I mean,
I know. And I embrace it. I'm only kidding.
Yeah, but poor John, I brought out the Bammy. It was like sizzling hot. I just put it in the oven. He's like, oh my God. I'm like, hey, it just came out of the oven.
By the way, forgot
to tell him.
On purpose, because that's what chefs do. That's what chefs do. You put down like a
sizzle platter.
A sizzle platter, whatever. Yeah, a stir fry or something like this. And then you don't say anything.
No, it's not that. It's because we can actually pick it up with our bare hands and not hurt us. So we don't even
I don't have any fingerprints anymore.
Neither do we.
Yeah. I literally opened the smoker barehanded and like people are like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, it's passion.
350 degrees in the oven today. I was taking the tray out with no towel and he's looking at me like
that's weirdos. What do you want from me? You chose this life, you know.
Well, we're pirates.
You did. Y'all chose this.
Well, I did.
Yeah.
100%. Well, the life chose me.
Yeah. Life chose you. It wasn't because you need a second chance somewhere.
My grandfather wasn't in the war. He was actually older when World War II happened. He was a military police officer in Nassau County in New York. So he actually, you know, had to deal with the soldiers when they came back on leave. And he cooked. And I just remember this image of me being like 3 years old. And I said, well, I want chicken parm. It was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock. Maybe it was 12 o'clock in the afternoon. That's what I was going to have for lunch. And he just whipped this dish up and he's like, okay, we're going to take the eggs and, you know, put the breadcrumbs in. I'm like, what magic is this?
Yeah.
You know, sorcery. It was a hush puppy. And that's how I was introduced to chicken parm and the hush puppy. And because he was from that, he had to drop out of elementary school in the fifth grade to start working.
Yeah.
Because of the Great Depression. And he never went back to school. So you talk about a generation of, you know, the people that did things. I mean, my grandfather was one of those things. And when I grew up, my mom had that passion too. And she cooked 5 days a week. And that's something I got into. I love to doing and playing and being creative. And it's where I went to. I mean, school for me was, I hated school.
Yeah.
Culinary school, second of my class.
Yeah. Yeah. But they great. They great in culinary. Really great.
Chef, what's your favorite social that people should find you?
Instagram. Instagram and TikTok. We're getting bigger on TikTok, which is great. The Liberty Smokehouse on Instagram and both TikTok, and then Chef Brian Jacobs on both Instagram and TikTok. We got some Facebook things going on here and there, but we post all our fun and where we're going to be at, what we're going to be doing, and who we're going to be doing it with, all on those socials.
Excellent. Thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thanks. And appreciate your sacrifices. That.
And we appreciate you sincerely, you know, you guys both coming out here. Yeah. Your food was amazing.
Thank you. I mean, Chef Justin and I love what we do.
So. No, you guys are studs for sure. John, I hate saying it every week, but, you know, you come through. yeah. every week. Jeff, yeah. you're a little short. Yeah. Yeah, but no. yeah. All right. I love you guys, man. All yeah. right.
Honored to be here. Thank you all. Yeah,
sincerely. We.
Oh, we're not.
Not out? No, we are out. You, what did you make? What are you doing?
Well, we got to stay tuned because we got my book coming out too. So we got to talk about
we're gonna
that.
We're going to do a whole thing on your book. Don't worry.
Oh, we got to have a launch party too.
We're going to do it. A launch party. Just make sure there's some bourbon, dude. We are.
And bacon.
Yes, we're out. Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.